Hello and welcome to Null Pointers in 2025. We're your hosts, Mark.
And Stephen.
And today we'll be talking about some new awesomeness Stephen has been brewing.
What?
So Stephen, I think we should be honest to our guests. Like every time we make the intro, we're not 100% sure where we'll be ending up. Sometimes, I mean, sometimes we do it like really professional. Like we say, hey, we have seen this topic at a conference, or we just have read a blog post, and this is the thing that just is like at the top of our heads, and we just have to get it out. But today, I think it's not one of those shows. I think it will be a bit more free-floating. But before I get to ask you about your new fun library you have been doing, which is some preview maybe, but I don't care. You know, sneak peeks for our listeners. So it's the new year. There has been some downtime. I've been wondering, I mean, what have you been up to during this Christmas break? I know I have been doing some things around the house. And all those home projects came to a skidding halt once the vacation time ended. And so I'm quite happy. Like most of them are done. I still got some additions I would like to do at some point. But yeah, what have you been up to?
Well, I'd love to say that I've been so busy and doing so many things. But our biggest problem has been that from Christmas all the way up to New Year's, the wife was sick. And we have two kids at home, so one parent being sick, it's a lot of management. And then from New Year's all the way up to the end of the vacation, it was my turn to be sick. And basically, our entire vacation was nullified, I guess. So yeah, we've been trying to do some fun things with the kids, but other than that, it's been a lot of crashing on the couch, feeling miserable.
Oh, man, that sounds not so nice having to be living in forced downtown, but at least you and your wife took shifts being down so the kids could always be entertained by both of you.
Yeah, so that's a thing.
Yeah. No, I mean, I did some work that I wanted to do for ages now. So one thing was my photos. I had them synchronized at about three or four places, and I finally got down to it, and I installed Imich, I-M-M-I-C-H. It's an open source thing you can download and install as a Docker container. And the vision of that thing is that it will replace Google Photos at one point. Okay. Fun fact, I didn't use Google Photos as one of my backups locations, but I had them on Apple Photos. I had them on OneDrive. I had some dumps on the NAS, on my NAS, just like lying around somehow. So I finally bit the bullet, got that set up, synced all my photographs into it, and it's quite neat. So I now have all my photographs at one central location. Sure, it could use some, am I missing some features? Sure. I mean, there's like no editing that you can do with it. You get a mobile app that will do the syncing for you. But as far as like, I think you can crop photos and do that. But I'll be honest, I used to be the person that took photographs with his DSLR camera. Which used to be big, hefty, and heavy. And then I would import them into a photo editing program, and I would go through every one of them, and I would adjust them a bit, I'd do all that stuff. And nowadays, I just put my iPhone at it, and I try to click. I might remember to clean the lens before that, which usually helps greatly. And then it's like auto settings all the way. Take that picture and that's that. Embrace the moment and stuff like that. No, so I've gotten really lazy with that. So for me, it was mainly just like having a central location. Plus you get some, one nice feature is it does the recognition, like you got some AI in it to recognize people, image recognition, stuff like that. So it will tell you where people are, and it will also show you every day, like, what happened at that day or what images you got from that day. And live photos work from my iPhone, which I've really come to like. So it works. So that was really great. So that's one thing I did. And it took quite a bit of time to get that all sorted out, so it would be humming neatly along. And I also did some other like small home improvement stuff during the things, like getting stuff wired up, hooking it up to my Home Assistant. So I think just like the what you do as a person when you get older and you have a house and you just want to have new gadgets to play with, you just start to wire stuff into your house and bring it all together and have some dashboards which you like to look at because numbers are cool and graphs and stuff like that. So yeah, that's been my thing. And the RetroPie, I must say, that was a huge hit. It worked quite nicely. So we had a lot of fun playing some retro games during the family. Time flew by. So yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, I sort of relate to your DSLR story. I used to I still have one, but like I think the last 3-4 years of holidays, I guess, it's been sitting at home. It's the iPhone just to snap and it's fine. Like there's ain't nobody got time for that DSLR. Like you said, like you shoot like 1,000 pictures or something and then you go through and edit them all. It's like, okay, I mean,
yeah,
I can get that people find that to be a fun hobby and like, sure, but yeah, just not for me anymore. The cameras on the phones have gotten to a point where I'm like, yeah, it's good enough.
And it's just like the sheer volume of images. I still have like that one task in the back of my head. I'll go through the images like bit by bit and just sort them out. But that's just so many. And I'm pretty sure there are some very embarrassing photographs still in there because it goes now back to like when I had like my first like digital photography stuff, which is like in the early 2000s. So yeah. But it's fun to see like some old photographs and just go like, man, I used to look like a child.
Once upon a time.
Yeah. Everybody. I think everybody goes through those phases. But yeah. So those were like my holiday projects, and I still got like some more things I would like to do. I must say, like once you dive into those Docker container things, the amount of things you can set up is quite cool. So I think one other thing I would still like to do at some point is I have a Ubiquiti Unify network. I think that's like pretty much the standard of every person that is in software. At some point, they will bite the bullet and get themselves some Ubiquiti stuff to set up because it just works and it's nice. But I have like this old control. So you usually need some part where you can configure everything. And I bought myself the original cloud key, which is a small thing. And I'm not sure if it's like discontinued by Ubiquiti, but you used to be able to just update the thing over the app and that's no longer possible. And I think you can still do it by hand somehow, but I never bothered to really get into that. So I just thought, well, you could just, I mean, you can install the management software on a Raspberry Pi or just on any Linux server. So why not spin up a Docker image that just does that for me? And then, And there seems to be something out there, but it's just like always, every time you do something like that, playing around with the network, it's usually like, oh yeah, this looks like a 15 to 30 minute thing. And then 2 days later, especially like the network has to run at my home. So maybe next vacation I'll bite the bullet and do that.
Now that you mention it though, like I also have some Ubiquiti stuff and one of the access points is on one of the kids' room or in one of the kids' rooms. And actually somewhere in between all this being sick, so one of the kids' closets broke down, basically. Like, I opened the door.
Break down?
Well, I opened the door, and for some reason, the door was in my hand and not on the closet anymore. So, yeah, well, that thing was 10 years old or something, so I think the wood in apostrophes, air quotes, kind of rotted out. So we actually had to go to IKEA to get a new one, and that is a project these days. Yep. Getting a closet at IKEA and putting it up. It's gotten easier because like the entire frame actually required zero screws. Like the back wall folded out and all the side walls were already attached to it. It's like, whoa, all fancy. But circling back to the Ubiquiti stuff, that was actually lying on top of the old closet. So I had to actually fix that a bit and put it on the wall instead and all that kind of stuff. But then I opened the Ubiquiti app and it was like, dude, you haven't updated these things in years. Please update all of us. And yeah, that was fun. So it should now all be up to date.
Yeah, pro tip, you can actually have an auto update.
Yeah, I enabled that immediately.
And since you're like you're running your own company and I don't want to pretend to know all the things that's going on in your life, but like 2 a.m. in the morning is safe bet for me just to say, yeah, you can upgrade then, because usually I'm in bed at 2 a.m. Usually already I probably could like put it on to 10 p.m. because it would be anyway a good reminder to go to bed then at my age. But that works. For me, it's only the configuration thing. I don't think it's like super important. I got no idea. Listener, if you know otherwise, please contact us over the nullpointers.io on Blue Sky. Just reach out. Tell us what we all could improve in our life. Anyway, moving along. Before we get to the fun part, me asking you questions.
No.
I think we just have to make a little shout out. The .NET MAUI Day, which you can find under MAUIDay.net.
Correct.
In the browsers, is this year, I think the first time it's in London.
Yes. So
it usually used to be in Germany, in Cologne. So first time in London. And while it is sold out, it's a free event. So air quotes, sold out. There is a waiting list. And the speakers have been announced. So if you are interested in .NET MAUI and you want to get some really great content and hook up with some even cooler people that will be attending, be sure to check it out. And you can join the waitlist. And I've heard rumors that sometimes the people on the waitlist, they still get the okay to attend.
They get in somehow.
They get in, yeah. And you can always contact Stephen because he's one of the organizers. So you actually, if you listen to this, you know him, you know. I mean, you hear him from time to time. So basically, best friends.
I must admit, I didn't organize much for this because the guys over in the UK actually arranged most of this. And also to add to that, it's like, it's in London, but it's like an addition on top of what we already had. So it's not like we've moved the whole thing from Germany to London because we feel like it. So it's an additional event elsewhere under the same banner. So that's very nice. So props to all the people that helped put that together. Looking at the speakers, I see a very familiar face, Mark. A very familiar face.
Very familiar face.
So I'm wondering how you came to plug this, but like now I know.
Well, I mean, you know, if David Altino, the product manager of .NET MAUI, is showing up somewhere, familiar face, I will have a shout out for the event ready. That's just how it goes.
I imagine.
And there might be my photograph also in the lineup, which I'm always very grateful if I get to talk somewhere about .NET MAUI, which is always fun. So but generally speaking, I think if you're a listener and you're interested like in organizing a .NET MAUI Day event, just reach out to the organizers. It's not a trademark that is under you can just reach out to them and you can say, hey, I would be like super interested in organizing a .NET MAUI Day at my location. And you could then use the website and also some of the channels that they have set up to get things rolling. As Stephen has pointed out, it is not like you can just say, hey, I would be interested in having it here, and the organizers will just do it for you. There will be some lifting on your end required.
Yep.
Like an IKEA store, you get
you put it together products, yourself,
but the assembly is all yours to do.
Yeah.
Just to let you know, it would be possible to organize the .NET MAUI Day somewhere near you if it's always too far away for you.
You circled around back to that very nicely, to the IKEA thing. Yeah.
Yeah,
it sounds about right.
But speaking about IKEA and assembling things, one caveat I always have, and I think I've mentioned this once or twice on the show, is whenever it comes to UI, I got different talents. It's not UI per se. It might be that my talent is, I don't know, writing code, but UI is always a bit of a struggle. And .NET MAUI, it comes with a lot of these things you can assemble, like a Lego kit or something, and you can style it how you want to. But that can be a challenge, especially if you're someone who's not design friendly. And if you have ever done anything in the web world, there are like these ready to go Tailwind CSS, Bootstrap. I don't know if that's still a thing. I think it's still a thing.
I think it is.
But yeah, you can just like plug in a CSS darning package and you'll get something that just looks not like a website from the 90s, which I think is still the original HTML button that you'll get. It's like this nice thing that's not so nice. And Stephen, I've seen on your activities on GitHub, you have been assembling something that would help me maybe with my next app. Is that true?
I've been tinkering. I guess having all sorts of fever dreams over the holidays brings you to this point where you're like, I need to create something new.
Absolutely.
No, as people might know who've listened to us more often, I like UI. I like tinkering with UI. And actually, I've been working on various UI-related things, but mostly on the web. So, for example, the .NET MAUI day that we mentioned earlier, that got a new website with the whole London edition, so we can manage different events on different locations a bit more easier. And that was basically where I also figured out that something like a Tailwind CSS, which is a, how do you put that? I think they call it a utility-based framework themselves. So it's basically, and I'm probably selling it short, but in short, it is a bunch of CSS classes that allow you to style things based on function more than over how you would typically set up your own CSS, at least how I would typically do it. So if I'm making a website, I'm making CSS classes like a wrapper or a menu header, or like it's based on what it's supposed to do. And in this case, it's more based on how it's supposed to look. So you have classes like text medium or text large or text extra large or you name it. And that basically makes your text bigger or smaller. Or you have things like background color gray. Well, guess what that does?
So it's the foreground color.
Yeah. Like the text color changes. It's all sorts of weird. So basically, it's much more pointed at doing smaller things. So it's like, it's not a big CSS class that sets tons of properties. It's very focused on it does this, it does that. And combining them together makes you able to put together your UI in that fashion. So if you want a shadow, you give it a shadow class. If you want big text, you give it a big text class. You give it a color class for the text. Like you pile up all these classes and then that makes it look funky. So also not very long ago, I figured out that something like that actually exists in .NET MAUI, where you can add multiple styles to a thing, but without using actual styles. Because I'm sure you've used styles in the past before. And I think the biggest downside to styles, in my opinion, is that they're always tightly coupled in the sense that you define a key and you reference that key as a static resource on your element. And if something between those two isn't correctly set up, it screams murder and fire and all sorts of things, and it just breaks. And I don't like that. So what MAUI also has, and that's something I figured out not very long ago, is a style class property, and that allows you to actually set styles in a CSS kind of fashion where if it doesn't find it, it just silently ignores it. It doesn't crash. It doesn't care, basically. And while obviously you could say that has its own flaws in the sense that it's harder to track errors or something like that. For styling, I think it's easier to track errors because you can just typically see that it's not working. If you're saying it should have a shadow and it doesn't have a shadow, then something's wrong. But Basically what I wanted to do then is take the Tailwind things that I did, for example, for the MAUI Day app and think, okay, well, then this could technically also apply to .NET MAUI. If we use style class, we can just use the same system and work in the same kind of way to style our apps. And that's basically where that thing was born that you mentioned very basically.
Which I think is really neat. So the thing's called Plugin MAUI Crosswind.
Correct.
So
link in the show notes.
Off the top of your hands. Yeah, link in the show notes. So be sure to check it out. There were a few things. So since it's all on GitHub, it's open source. So to a user, you can check it out. And I must say, what I really like is you did not just like implement like the technical side, but you also make like some nice instructions on how you can use it. And there seems to be like some limitations still on the UI controls. So as you mentioned, like some things they're in the styles, but they do not apply to all controls. So
yeah,
don't be mad at Steven for that.
Sorry.
Just extend MAUI so it will support all of Tailwind's greatness.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? So while CSS basically allows you to set anything on anything, MAUI does not work that way. It has typed controls like label, button, blah blah blah, and they all have properties that they support. So there needs to be a mapping from sort of CSS related properties to those controls. But if you're trying to style a control and give it a text color, but the control doesn't support text, then I mean that's just useless. So there are some limitations in that sense, that if you're trying to set a border on something and that thing doesn't support border, then it just fails, basically. I mean, CSS would typically, like, border works on most things because that's just how CSS works. That's just not how this works because of the underlying technology. So there are limitations. And there's also some limitations in the sense that, for example, shadow, it's currently not stylable through CSS. That's just, it's not in .NET MAUI. So what I did is actually open a PR in .NET MAUI for that. I actually contributed for once, Gerald had to hold my hand all the way through the process, but contributed something.
He's a good handholder.
Yeah, he likes that. Nah, it's all good. So that's some stuff that I added to .NET MAUI, which I hope will be released at some point, and then it can also go into Crosswind. So it's still very much an evolving thing, but it already supports quite a few things. So like you can, all the text size stuff that works, there's a bunch of color stuff already in there, so background and text colors. There's the entire set that Tailwind supports, basically. So they've made a whole palette already of colors that you can use out of the box. So I basically took those colors and implemented them all. So you can already get started if your branding leans towards red or towards yellow or towards blue. Like there's a base set already available. And the same goes for things like margins, paddings. Like, I think I've said it before on various UI-related podcasts that we've done. You need to have some sort of grid system in place, because else your UI will look like a mess. So, like, margins, paddings, sizings of things. If you stick to, like, a grid system, which means a system where it's always a multiple of a certain unit, so say 4 is typically a good starting point, everything needs to be dividable by 4. So a margin is either 16 or 8 or 20 or something dividable by 4. And that is basically already in there, in the sense that most of the spacing and sizing related classes are multiples of 4. And what I also am looking to implement, which is not in there yet, is that you can actually override these default values. So say your designer is a nut job and he decides it's units of 5, then you could actually override the whole class definition so that everything becomes multiples of 5 and all that kind of stuff. So basically how it works, it's, if we were to dive into the internals, it's basically a CSS file that I've pre-defined that gets included at startup of your app into your resource dictionary of your app. So like where you'd normally put your styles, that's where it gets added to. And that's where you basically, you could override my styles by implementing your own. So that's basically a parameter you could give to the initializing process. And that's what allows you to say that you want units of 5. So it basically takes my CSS file, adjusts the things where needed, and loads that instead. So it's pretty versatile in that sense.
I think it's super neat. I mean, one thing I saw is that it's easy actually using CSS. Back in the Xamarin days when CSS was introduced, because Xamarin Forms was based on XAML dialect, and XAML had like XAML styling for doing that. And I remember at some point they implemented you can now also define your styling in CSS. And then there was a huge hubbub about that, because how dare you bring in CSS into the XAML world. I personally, I must say, if you do web development, I like the way how CSS works. Once you understand how styles are applied or how you can overwrite them and the whole layering of them, I think it makes sense to me. I mean, sure, it's a different language than XAML, a bit on top. But I think these days, a lot of people of us probably get exposed to some web if you're doing front end. So yeah, it's usually it's not the same, but yeah, I'll have to bite the bullet at some point. I'm not saying I'm great at CSS. I've got a lot better since ChatGPT. Also, the validation is quite easy, but I think what's really cool is, so I could install this as a NuGet package, I assume.
Correct.
The extension. And then the one thing that I usually always have to adjust is the base colors, because they have to then look in a certain corporate identity colorway. So I could then easily just overwrite those. I guess same is true for fonts. If I got some custom fonts I have to load into.
That's the idea, yeah.
And then I have a lot of, because I mean, usually for me at least, it's as you said, if you just take the bare bone components, your app does not, you know, there's just the certain pizzazz that is missing if you just go with the native stuff. And I mean, sure, it's great if you do demos where you don't really show off any UI features, but if you build a real app, I think it's worth investing time into having a nice polished UI. That's why I really like this, because I mean, these Tailwind CSS or all these things, I mean, they really help me getting started and me bringing over a point without everybody just shooting down the app because the UI looks rubbish. And if you got a designer, I'm sure he will have his opinions of how you can improve it, but I mean, you could take it from there. And it's also I think it's the way, because you did it open source, what I really like is I sometimes have the feeling styling stuff, a lot of people, they don't really know how to do it with XAML, so they just put a lot of the styles right in line, when they write the UI, that's where the styling goes, which is a bit not optimal, because you'll then have many pages that look a wee bit different. And if you've got anybody with a aesthetical sense looking at the styles, they'll go why are all these margins different? And why is that button styled here like this and over there like that? And using these, I mean, seeing an example how it would be done with Tailwind CSS, which is a huge template, which probably provides a lot of rendering stuff you would not always apply to every application. I think it's also a great resource to just look up. So be sure to try out the NuGet package. But if you're wondering how you could improve your styling or how styling is actually applied using CSS, be sure to check out the other link in the show notes, which will point you to the GitHub repository, where you can also leave a star, because we all know stars buys nothing, but
yeah,
brings you fame. So
basically, it's a good starting point, right? So obviously, if you have designers, they're going to want to put their own spin on it. Will this get you there? Maybe. Partially, but it's basically more of a quick way to make something look good without too much effort, I guess, for people who might not have a designer or someone who has very strict ideas on how something would look. Because it's if you have that scenario where there's someone who has very strict ideas on this should look like that, this should look like that, there's a tipping point, right? So if you need to do 50 customizations to this to make it look like what it's supposed to look like in your case, then it's going overboard on what you're trying to achieve. You might be better off just starting from nothing and styling it yourself. But if you just want something that out of the box provides you with some styling that would make your app look modern-ish, or good. Good is such a value.
Make it look neat.
Neat, yeah. I wouldn't call it good, because
but that's just very subjective. your aspirations for a UI, they're just like, so, I mean, for me, yeah, you say like this is a good starting point. Look, to be honest, Stephen, this could be my end point of starting. It's just like that's the level that we are at, right? I mean, you're going like, I mean, yeah, this is like my starting point, and then you put on your designer jumper, and then you look at it, and then you add some more. I mean, I'm not saying it's a waste of time. I just say I don't have those skills. And if I do like a one-off app or a little thing for me or for some few people, I think this thing is really great. And the other thing is like, if you have like the aesthetics or the eye for the aesthetics and you want to check out how it's done, I think this is like a really nice example of how you can get started, like how you can do these styling things and how you can like load your styling load up process. So it will be like in the resource dictionaries, which is how styling is done in XAML and all those things. And yeah, I mean, there are limitations right now, as pointed out.
Definitely.
I mean, what I really like is in your documentations, you went through and you said like, hey, this thing on these controls, it will not work. This will not work. This will not work. Or all these things will work. It's more green than red, but that's like really nice because luckily. I think you like also is like the frustration point when you go like, why does this not work? And you go like, well, because the framework below does not support this. It's a bit nicer. Because, I mean, that's always the thing, right? I mean, with UI, because, I mean, as you said before, if something goes wrong, you don't get like a crash and burn exception, which I think is the right thing to do too. But it will just not really render. So you never know, like, did I just do a mistake or is there something else wrong? And so, yeah, I think it's nice to have like this overview because then I can know like, oh, my fault, which... quite often is, but sometimes it's a limitation that you have that you can then open a pull request for on the .NET MAUI repo, so that will work in the future, which I think is the neat thing, because then you can all get even prettier apps with nice shadows. Definitely. And borders and stuff like that.
And also, yeah, just to add to that, like you mentioned it sort of already, but this is not the be-all end-all of styling. Like, you can add this and apply your own styles on top, so you it's not like this takes precedent or something. Like, you can always add to it with your own styles, either through XAML or your own CSS or however you please. So it's like it's a starting point, like you said.
Yeah, and I mean, you now provided a way how you can super neatly like integrate it with a NuGet package and then get rolling from there. But I mean, since it's open source, if you feel like, hey, I'll probably use 60%, but 40% I have to edit anyway, you could like clone the repository or take it like as a base layer, so you can see how these ideas work and work from there. Because it really depends how sophisticated the UI requirements are for your app. And for me, it has always been a bit hard to, like, I know there are documentations out there how you can do it, but I think it's always nice when you can see like a full, like, large example, you know, like, hey, it's not like, well, we're gonna do the styling for these two or three things and then you get it. Because, I mean, usually, like, if you got a ton of styles, which, yeah, here is the case, it sometimes is okay, how do I structure it? What is the idea behind that? And whatnot. Because, I mean, many apps or larger apps that I've built, especially like when I think about the web, you usually start out with some Tailwind, Bootstrap, whatever, like CSS framework, or that's how I have done it often in the past or in the teams that I've worked with. And then you take that and then you tweak that so you get the design that you want. Because usually the designer or the designs that I get, they have like a certain part is like very individual, but like a huge part will be also based on such a framework. I mean, I know designers that will work like with Tailwind CSS and then extend it, so it will then have like this unique look and feel for a client, and that makes it easier, because then you as a developer, a web front end developer, who has to then make these adjustments, you then not have to like start from scratch, but can reuse quite a large bit of the template. And I must say, like, generally speaking, you said like before, it just has been in the back of my head since you mentioned it, like at the beginning of the show, this graceful failure, like not like crashing the app when something does not work. I must say I'm a huge fan of that. The longer I'm a developer, because I mean, I used to be like super strict like also like in logic in the back end, where you go like, yeah, we will only work if you exactly like implement it to the specification and all those things. And I've just been noticing, if you go like super strict, sometimes you really have to do that. Like if you got some physical device that you're like writing to, and there's a, like a limit on how much pressure or temperature or all those things, I fully get it why you would go like, no, we cannot heat this up to 400 degrees. It will just break and burn, and people will not want to do that. But I mean, oftentimes, like if you giving some leeway is often better, or like if there is a failure, you make a soft failure so the thing still runs, but it doesn't just like come to a hard halt. Because usually when some things come to a hard halt as developer, you will then feel the pressure to get this hard halt fixed ASAP.
Someone would like that.
And if you got like a soft failure in there, there is often like a workaround that they can then work with. So just pro tip, just don't explode in customers' faces. It's usually not what they want anyway. Yeah, just had this discussion with another colleague of mine who did like very strict checks. Like you can only change from this state into that state if you have been previously in that one. I just go like, I'm not saying this will be the case, but 80% chance that one of your five checks that he did in there will be removed in the near future, because the customer will just complain like, dude, I want to change. Let me do the change. I know what I'm doing. So yeah. Just a little shout out. I think I like graceful failures.
So do I.
And on that note of graceful failures, this show, I think, has come to an end.
Has gracefully failed.
Yeah, we will gracefully say goodbye for now until next time.
Yes.
We have been your hosts, Mark Halliburn.
And Stephen Davison.
See you next time. Be sure to check us out on Blue Sky, nullpointers.io. We're also on Blue Sky, so you can find us there. And stay safe. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Tschüssi.
Meet Morp.